Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska!
I think it's the best show on the air ever that has been. It's weird how good it is. It's so strange.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, September 13, 2022, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 602, the Biden-Harris administration, 55 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram, TheBobSeska, Twitter, BobSeska_go, and of course our Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. Plus, you can follow Buzz Burbank at Michael J. Elston on Twitter. Do it right now, because there he is.
You say Buzz Burbank.
I'm not ready.
You've said it all.
Hi, how are you?
I still have my golf cleats on. let me get these off.
So that's what you're doing.
Anyway, hi, everybody. He's Bob. Mm-hmm. I'm Buzz. And we're not sure how this happened, but Queen Elizabeth left us her corgis.
Good dog. Pooping all over the place.
Trump was shocked this week when he heard the Queen had died. He was like, Lindsay?
Oh, wow, okay.
Strap yourselves in. Britain's new king wants to be known as Charles III. Charles I was actually beheaded, but you know, sequels are never as good as the originals. And also, Pope Francis has been talking openly about retirement. He says the job is too demanding, having to run place to place apologizing. Other world news, tensions over Ukraine have prompted Russia to shut off its natural gas pipeline to Germany. It's bad now, but we could have used that 80 years ago.
Yeah, lessons learned.
Steve Bannon's in jail. How about that, huh? Mm-hmm. Steve Bannon's in jail.
Excellent.
A judge has denied his request for a new trial because he never cleaned up for the first one.
Contempt of hygiene.
And Chief Justice John Roberts over the weekend spoke out to defend the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, he was wearing his white robe at the time.
More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
All right, here we go. Brand new week with Rocky Mountain Mike.
Yeah.
We caught him that Trump. He can't back out. Because we love our country, baby. Why can't they see? He's crooked and shady. And we don't believe a word he says.
Not a word, no.
We can't go on together with seditious crimes. Caught in the trunk. He can't back out. Because we love our country, baby.
Yeah,
Rocky Mountain Mike, Mary in Ann Arbor. I had to play this one for a number of reasons, including the fact that we finally saw that Elvis movie over the weekend.
Ah, good for you. I've seen it as well.
I loved it. What a great performance that was. And holy shit, Tom Hanks. Is that really how Colonel Tom Parker sounded? That was my big question throughout it. Did he sound that weird and cartoony?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, what's interesting about the public reception to that movie is its viewer ratings, you know, how people rank the movie. You know, they rate it with Rotten Tomatoes or whatever.
Uh-huh.
It's not getting great reviews. It's getting good reviews from the viewing public, but not great. And I think the reason may be Elvis fans who are not happy with the movie. I mean, you know, the diehard Elvis nuts.
Of course.
You know, and so I think that's kind of hurt the movie's overall rating, but I thought it was quite good, and apparently you did too.
I mean, there have been lots of portrayals of Elvis, some of them good, some of them completely divorced from what Elvis was actually like, more cartoony, caricature-like.
This
was so accurate, and especially in that last performance where he's fat and high as a kite and all kinds of pills and drugs. And that part of it, that last performance, you squint and you're looking at Elvis. That's how accurate it was. And I give it a lot of credit for that.
That was Elvis's voice and all the singing, but the actor did a great job with it. And what it really impressed me, and impressed me early on in the movie and stuck with me all the way, is Elvis had genuine love and genuine friendship for black musicians.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In that respect, there wasn't a racist bone in his body, but he made his fortune singing their songs.
Yeah, he co-opted
to a large extent. So, you know, mixed feelings about that. But I was impressed by, according to this account, Elvis was in no way racist. He loved his black musician friends, and that love was genuine. And the movie seemed to indicate that he would rather spend time with them than a lot of the people he was spending time with.
Okay, well, I would give that a solid A-, the Elvis movie. I thought it was pretty good.
So did I. Well, while we're on entertainment news, how do you feel about being snubbed by the Emmys again?
You know what? Damn the Academy for not awarding anything to Ray Seahorn and Bob Odenkirk and Better Call Saul. The most perfectly written, constructed, performed series in modern times, and it still can't get recognized by the Academy. It's so strange.
Well, they were nominated, and as they said at the top of the show, that's a big deal. But what happens the next day is the press lists who was snubbed at the Emmys. Well, in a sense, no one was snubbed, and in another sense, many shows were snubbed. Not only Better Call Saul, but
Gaslit was snubbed.
Gaslit, completely not mentioned at all.
Yep.
Ozark. There were a number of shows that seemed to be ignored, but they were nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem, it seems to me, is there are so many nominees and so many of them are deserving. And oftentimes two cast members from the same show are competing against each other, you know, and so it's just very difficult to pick a single winner.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's still a weird thing about the Emmys, but, you know, I'm glad some of the shows got recognition, other shows I didn't care about so much, but some of my shows were recognized, and I appreciate that. Hats off to Abbott Elementary that spent all of that. It's a great show, first of all. I doubt that you've watched. Have you watched it?
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it yet.
It's an ABC sitcom, and you think, well, right there, we're screwed. You know, but the truth is, educators, teachers love this show. And when it came time, when Abbott Elementary was given its budget to promote itself in the Emmy competition, that's where they buy ads in Variety saying, vote for us. They buy ads in the SAG-AFTRA magazine saying, vote for us. Instead of spending that money on that, the Abbott Elementary crew donated that money to schools.
Oh, good for them. That's a great idea.
And subsequently did not win. they got a couple of Emmys for writing and Best Supporting Actress, but they were otherwise snubbed, if we must use that word.
Yes, indeed. I was glad to see The White Lotus won a bunch of awards, too. That was one of the best series of last year.
Yeah. Gotta see that.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it yet.
It's a must-watch show. Absolutely.
It's still in my queue.
So interesting and weird and unique from top to bottom. Murray Bartlett won, I guess, last night, and he was outstanding in that series. Everyone was so good. It's hard to pick out one thing that was a standout performance or thing about that series. It was just overall really good.
And significant that John Oliver beat out Stephen Colbert. in that category. Yeah, what do they call it? Comedy variety or something like that?
Well, we got so much to get to today. Yes. But of course, let's talk about me for a second.
Enough about you. Let's talk about you.
Yeah, thank you. I had a great time bike riding with Stephanie Miller on Saturday. Hey, she was in town for the Sexy Liberal show in D.C. at Sidney Harmon Hall. Kimberly and I couldn't make the show. So instead, what I said to Stephanie is, well, why don't we do a bike ride earlier on Saturday before you have to start getting ready for the show. So that's what we did. We met up in the district, met up downtown. Stephanie rented a bicycle and we headed down the National Mall where it was packed with people and then got to around the Watergate, which is where the trail begins, the CNO trail, the Capitol Crescent trail, all these trails.
Familiar.
Yeah. And so we headed down that way and turned around at a certain point after probably about 10, 12 miles because it was getting late in the day. Whew. And on our way back, we're sort of riding a little bit side by side. I think I was I was briefing Stephanie on what was going on with the Jeffrey Berman situation, which we're going to talk about here in just a second. And this guy comes out of nowhere and suddenly I hear right behind me, "On your left!" And that surprised and shocked me, causing me to swerve like Toonces the Driving Cat style. And then over I go, like I kind of lost my balance and lost my bearings. Oh. And so I crashed my bike down this embankment, this wooded embankment, through like pricker bushes and thorn and trees and saplings and things hit me.
How embarrassing.
Well, yeah, it was embarrassing and painful. And then the way I landed, my left leg was wedged between my bicycle and this tree. And then the bicycle, because I was on this very steep slope, I couldn't free the bicycle from trapping my leg. So
the weight of your body was holding down the bicycle.
Yeah. So I was thinking, well, I think the weight of the bicycle, plus it was kind of wrapped around the tree a little bit, like a vice grip around my leg.
Is the bike okay?
The bike is fine, believe it or not. The bike is in much better shape than I am right now. That's for sure. But it was one of those situations where had I been by myself, I'd still be in that ravine. I'd still be trapped down in the woods there.
Had you been by yourself.
Hello?
Yeah. Had you been by yourself, you might not have ended up in the ravine.
Well, that's true. It was that guy's fault. I mean, that guy came out of nowhere, surprised me. And in order to maneuver out of the way, because we're talking about a trail, it's about 5 or 6 feet wide. And on the left side of the trail, the direction we were headed is the CNO Canal, which is the most stagnant, disgusting water I've ever seen in my life.
It's you didn't land in that, did you?
No. That's the big takeaway of that bike crash was that it could have been 1,000 times worse. I could have landed in that water where there are most certainly all kinds of creepy crawlies, water moccasins, and all the rest of it down in there, on top of bacteria just waiting to crawl up into all of your orifices if you end up in that
stagnant water. Flesh-eating virus, yeah.
Flesh-eating virus, one of the many things I'm sure down there. And also, I could have ended up crashing into either Stephanie or that guy, and it wouldn't have just been me who was injured. Oh, it would have been several people. And so what I ultimately did, I think, was the best case scenario in that circumstance.
You took one for the team.
Yeah. So Stephanie crawled down that hill, crawled down that embankment, and along with this guy who drove me off the road, lifted the bike up and off of my leg so I could free myself and crawl back up.
Yeah. Describe your injuries, please.
Well, first of all, I'll talk about the serious injuries first. We'll do the serious ones first. I've had a shitty shoulder for like a year now. I've got what they call an impingement, where one of the tendons in my rotator cuff is like inflamed and won't heal for some reason. And so I've been dealing with that. And then this crash aggravated my shoulder injury. And then plus later that day, after I got home, I went and got my bivalent Pfizer vaccination at the pharmacy in the same shoulder. So this left shoulder is just a mess right now because of those two things. And then I bashed my ribs again, my left rib cage against that tree that had had my leg trapped too.
Ouch. So are you bruised? Are you bruised?
I'm bruised. I've got some road rash on on my side. I've got the other thing, the minor injuries, basically like a bunch of small little men with swords came up and slashed me all over my legs. Like 1,000 paper cuts, all of them, like that sort of thing. Then there's a huge gash across the back of my leg. It's kind of a mess. But no, those are the very minor injuries that I have no issue with. It's just right now, it's just my rib cage and my shoulder are just absolutely killing from that crash. But I got to thank Stephanie Miller for jumping in and helping me out of that ravine. I mean, Stephanie Miller, Stephanie Miller could fit into my left leg. I mean, that's the size difference between the two of us. And yet she was able to come down and help me out. And everything turned out to be fine. So I rode the rest of the way back to the rental place with Stephanie. And it was just one of those things where eventually you ride your bike long enough, you're going to end up in a crash. And that was my crash. So
I've been there.
On the bright side, I get to hit reset on my crash timeline. So I guess, okay, let's give me another few years before I do that again.
It's been one day since Bob's bike had an accident.
Exactly. It's been one day since I since I did a Toonses off of a ravine. Yeah.
All over the town.
There he is.
Toonses, the driving cat.
That was me. Well,
I know hindsight is doesn't seem helpful, but maybe this will help you in the future. I think you made a tactical error.
Okay.
I think you should have waited until after the accident to tell Stephanie, I can't be in the show, I'm injured. You see, that would have worked so much better.
I would have hobbled out there like Willy Wonka in that opening scene with the cane and looking doddering. And yeah, that would have been me if I had been able to attend that night.
Well, get better soon.
Yes, if my laughter is a little bit stifled, I don't think I cracked any ribs. I just think I've got a pretty bruise, bruising under there. Yeah,
I had that for a while from a bike fall. Mm-hmm. But we do hope you recover soon. And I think the audience should know it only hurts when you laugh. And so you were very valiant to be laughing during the monologue today.
That's right.
Some would say crazy, but definitely valiant.
Yes, indeed. Well. Yeah, really, I don't know if this speaks to my wiring or what, but the only thing that I could think of over and over again is, man, that could have been a hell of a lot worse. There could have been the Potomac River down there. There could have been rocks down there, giant boulders. There could have been barbed wire down there. There could have been all kinds of disastrous things. Like
the ghost of G. Gordon Liddy. You just don't know.
A whole series of rakes hitting me in the face as I careened down the gully. But
You're Bob, but you're not Sideshow Bob.
So. Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. And plus, thankfully, I was with Stephanie, and she was able to help me out there.
No,
so
kids,
she's my hero today.
What a mensch. Yeah, that's great.
Hero of the day, for sure.
That's how we know Stephanie.
Yes, yes. And we'll be telling these stories like Quint and Hooper for the next... You know, the scene in Jaws where they're sitting around talking about their shark injuries? That's going to be me and Stephanie for like the next 10 years. We've got 10 years of stories. The wounds will heal, but the stories will last forever. So there's that on the upside. Yeah. So
they'll become legend, I predict.
Just call me Toonses.
No. All over the town.
Who?
Toons is the driving cat.
That's me. All right. So, okay. Ooh. So, I have no idea why Donald Trump was in Sterling, Virginia over the weekend. Do you have any guesses, Buzz? Do you have any theories as to why he secretly jetted off from Bedminster with his golf clothes, landed at Dulles, and then ended up at his Sterling, Virginia golf resort?
Judging from the list of people, and I don't know if I can pull this up again, but judging from the list of people who were with him there on the golf course, I'm thinking witness tampering. That's my... Devin Nunes was there. Ron Johnson was there.
Really?
Some of those other types were there, along with his, you know, his property manager and his security guy and some others. But
I think Trump there.
Yeah, Eric was there. I think there's always reason to be suspicious. Maybe it was nothing. We're even hearing now that, you know, maybe those weren't even golf shoes when he got off the plane. But if he was going to play golf, it was raining. You know, it's really hard to make heads or tails of this story. And maybe it's all just a distraction anyway.
I think it's fun to occasionally engage in this kind of speculation about what Trump is up to. And I think
it makes sense.
It's completely rational, too, to make your first assumption the crime assumption. I mean, that's always been my mantra here with Donald Trump following along. Yeah, yeah. He doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt on anything. No. If he looks like he's up to something shady, he probably is up to something shady. And that's
right.
And that was my first go-to on this.
The other thing to remember is this comes on the heels of former FBI agent Peter Strzok passing along retweeting video of boxes being loaded onto a plane bound for Bedminster, New Jersey, his golf course there. And the boxes were marked exactly the same way as the boxes in the FBI photograph of the documents taken from Trump's closet at Mar-a-Lago.
Yes.
And a lot of us have the same question. Why haven't they raided Trump Tower? Why haven't they raided Bedminster? Why haven't they raided his golf course in Sterling, Virginia? Why haven't they dug up Ivana? I don't know. We don't know where he's put these documents.
Yeah, and to me, that's the bigger story. The Bedminster, 3 days after NARA contacted him about the missing documents, because that shows or illustrates that perhaps Donald Trump absconded with a bunch of documents, brought them up to Bedminster. It's possible that these stories are connected insofar as maybe there was some speculation that maybe the FBI was going to search Bedminster and...
Right.
Search Trump Tower, so Trump had to go to Sterling in order to avoid being held in leg irons or whatever out in the driveway or however they do those things, whatever happens to the suspect in those searches. But as far as what was going on in Sterling, my most rational observation, my most rational theory is that he was maybe looking to sell that golf resort, and maybe those are potential buyers that he was showing around, hence Eric Trump with him, because as we know, Eric Trump is basically the guy who runs the Trump Organization day to day.
Naturally, we picked the dumb guy to be our business manager.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Shocking that Donald Trump would have such trouble with his businesses failing catastrophically.
And shocking or not, once again, he's doing something that makes him look suspicious, whether he is or not.
Right, right. So I think my first choice, probably the most likely choice, that he's up to something. That's a fair assumption given his track record. Second choice, maybe something more innocuous, like trying to unload the Sterling, Virginia Country Club because he is so desperate for cash. We all know, and we've been saying this, emphasizing this every chance we get, that Donald Trump is basically broke. His entire fortune is being upheld by Russian money and scotch tape and all the rest. I mean, it's a potential disaster at any given second. He's constantly chasing cash. Yeah, exactly right. Chasing the next paycheck. And so this might be a situation where if he's looking at losing the RNC funding of his legal bills, which he has, the RNC is not going to cover his legal bills on this Mar-a-Lago search and seizure Espionage Act situation. They've already declared that they're out. They're going to cover other things, but not this one. And so he's going to need the cash in order to defend himself. And I'm sure it's much more serious than what we're hearing at this point. So he may need to start selling off properties in order to finance his legal defense when it comes to the Espionage Act violations, as well as the obstruction of justice and anything else that comes up along the way.
So many.
In this ongoing document story. So that's my theory. I think it's a reasonable theory. I'd love to hear more theories in our comments on our Patreon page if you want to post what you think about all of this. But don't lose sight of the bigger story, which is this Bedminster story, where there's video of those, as you were saying, those boxes being carted into Bedminster. I'm surprised, or I would be surprised, if the FBI has no interest in searching Bedminster or Trump Tower or any place else Trump has been to look for these documents, because there are many.
I'm sure they're proceeding cautiously. On the other hand, we all know time is of the essence, and the longer you delay these things, the greater the chance that evidence can get away.
Mm-hmm.
We're terrified about that, but the 40 subpoenas issued over the last week, 30 of them to Trump White House people, the rest to campaign people, two people, one from the campaign, one from the White House, have had their phones seized. Steve Bannon claims 35 homes were raided, which kind of matches the DOJ information, or what we learned about the DOJ this week from, I believe, the New York Times. It's not as if Garland isn't doing anything. It's not as if the Justice Department isn't doing anything. I'm encouraged about that. And he has reason to panic. There's that 40 subpoenas is a lot of people.
Yes, it is. According to New York Times, Boris Epstein had his cell phone seized. There were at least two people, including Boris Epstein. The other guy was Mike Roman. He's a campaign strategist who was the director of the Election Day operations for the Trump campaign in 2020. Mr. Epstein and Mr. Roman have been linked to the critical element of Mr. Trump's bid to hold on to power. The effort to name slates of fake electors pledged to Mr. Trump from swing states won by Joe Biden in 2020 as part of that effort to block or delay congressional certification of Biden's Electoral College victory. One of the recipients, people said, was Dan Scavino, Trump's former social media director, who rose from working at a Trump-owned golf course to become one of his most loyal West Wing aides and has remained an advisor since Mr. Trump left office. Stanley Woodward, one of Mr. Scavino's lawyers, declined to comment to the Times. Another, here's a familiar name, another blast from the past. Bernie Kerik. Remember Bernie Kerik?
Oh, very well.
Rudy Giuliani's best buddy. Yeah, went to prison. He was considered a 9/11 hero initially, right after...
As was Rudy, believe it or not.
Oh, yes. Both of them were seen walking around in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. Mm-hmm. And he was the former New York City police commissioner. He was promoted claims of voter fraud alongside Rudy Giuliani.
Yes, he did.
He was issued a subpoena by prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington. His lawyer, Timothy Parlatore... Shocking there'd be a guy with a vowel ending his last name, huh?
Yeah.
Mr. Parlatore said his client had initially offered to grant an interview voluntarily. So that's his reaction to the subpoena. So everyone's being dragged in. You get a subpoena. You get a subpoena. Everyone gets a subpoena. They're handing out subpoenas like Oprah hands out cars. 43 empty folders. Just want to bring that up again. That was on the inventory. Empty folders. And so there was a lot of speculation. Remember? As to what happened to those documents. Were they just misplaced? Were they taken out of the folders and just placed somewhere else in those boxes? Or are they legitimately missing? Well, now, Buzz, we found out that they're legitimately missing. And the phrase that shocked me the most in this filing from last week is the documents are either lost or compromised. That is an amazing admission from the DOJ.
Kind of the same thing.
Yeah, from a point of just being shocked in terms of, holy shit, which is worse of those two options? That they were lost or compromised?
This has been called, and accurately, I think, the greatest security breach in the history of this nation. And it was committed by a president and former president.
It's incredible. What do you think is the worst case scenario between those two options, lost or compromised? Would you rather they have been lost or that they have been compromised? I don't know which one I'd side with.
Neither is good. I guess compromised is worse, but lost is virtually the same as compromised as far as security is concerned.
Sure. The documents could still be lost and also compromised.
So, it can be both.
And if they were just lost, where are they? And who has seen them? Who has found them? What happened to them? And so what a goddamn mess. And then Donald Trump has rejected, not a shock here, he's rejected the Justice Department's request to continue the damage assessment with those 100 TSSCI documents.
Well, of course he did.
As you recall, the DOJ tried to give Judge Cannon a get-out-of-jail-free card. Not literally, but an out in this ridiculous decision she's made about the special master. And in doing so, the DOJ requested that they be allowed to continue looking at those 100 TSSCI documents. And naturally, the Trump people said, no, because of course they're going to say no. Of course they're not going to agree to a goddamn thing that the DOJ wants.
Well, that's not the end of this, and I don't know if you're ready to talk about Special Master yet, but this Special Master, there was a lot of concern by progressives when they heard last night that the DOJ had accepted one of the proposed Special Masters from the Trump side. Yeah. Well, I understand the initial concern there, but the truth is that Raymond Deary is a widely respected judge, widely respected. But even though he was appointed by Reagan, Democrats support this guy. And I think it's important for our folks to know that his work could eclipse anything that Judge Cannon is doing. And in fact, it could force her to reverse some of her rulings, because he's going to get a look at these exact documents that you were just discussing about whether or not they're classified. Trump claims some of them may not be classified, that some of them are his. And, well, that's what the special master will sort out. So it doesn't matter what Trump says. It doesn't matter what Judge Cannon says. It doesn't matter even for the moment what DOJ says. It's up to this very trustable judge, Raymond Deary. And he's going to look at this and decide what's classified and what's not. And find out, and we'll find out who was telling the truth. I suspect this will come down on the side of the Justice Department, and that will put Judge Cannon in a corner.
Yeah, and never put Judge Cannon in a corner.
Right.
Have we learned yet whether or not they're going to file that appeal to Judge Cannon's ruling? Have they decided whether or not to go forward with that? I know they had an appeals document ready to go for the 11th Circuit last week, but I don't know if that's been officially filed yet. Do we know that yet?
Yeah, no, I haven't heard. Okay. I suspect they would. If they haven't filed it, they will.
I
would come down on the side of they probably filed it, but the judge hasn't spoken on it yet.
Yes, plus we haven't heard whether or not Judge Cannon is going to grant the DOJ their request to go forward looking at these documents. Because the ODNI, the ODNI has no idea what that office should do with their damage assessment at this point, because they don't know the parameters of this order. Because it's so shoddy and ridiculous.
Yeah, at first she didn't stop the security review, and now she has. Yeah. I think that Judge Deary can turn this around pretty quickly and get that going again. I have a lot of faith in this guy.
Okay, I hope your faith is well placed.
Yes, me too.
Because
always.
I'm just like, once again, as with anything with Donald Trump, it's like leaning too far back in your chair and almost falling over and catching yourself at the last minute.
The arguments that the Trump lawyers are making are specious, and while Judge Cannon may be willing to go along with them, I don't think Judge Deary, in fact, I'm pretty sure Judge Deary won't.
Okay.
And so, they can ask all day. They can request and file motions all day long, but as long as they keep filing BS, they're not going to get anywhere. And I look forward to that outcome, and I think that's an outcome we can expect.
Okay, well, coming up here in a few minutes, I want to talk about the latest from podcaster Matt Walsh and the ramifications of this jihad that he's on when it comes to Boston's Children's Hospital, of all places. There's more news on this front. It is shocking and disturbing, and I will again ask this question in a few minutes, but I'm going to suggest it now once again. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all of these podcast platforms continue to carry the Matt Walsh Show, despite the fact that he's engaged in stochastic terrorism against Boston's Children's Hospital.
Right.
I mean, any hospital would be bad enough. The fact that it's a children's hospital with sick children in it indicates that this is a particularly brazen and reckless little bit that he's doing on his show.
This is a right-wing attack on children. This is a right-wing attack on trans people. This is a right-wing attack on medical caregivers. I'm looking forward to talking about this. It's very concerning. And amid all the other things that are going on, this can't be ignored. I can't believe, by the way, that a half hour has gone by already.
I know. Plus, we haven't even gotten to Jeffrey Berman yet, something we talked about on Friday's After Party. Jeffrey Berman's got a new book out. And now we've got some additional details in terms of what's going to happen with the allegations from that book.
Yes.
Involves Bill Barr, involves Donald Trump, involves the Donald Trump Department of Justice.
Right.
So we're going to talk about that here in just a second. All right. But in the meantime, got to do this. We're talking about our Patreon page. I got to mention our brand new subscribers on our Patreon page and give them a fine and hearty thank you for signing up. Jason Chilton, Robert Heschel, Amy Fisher, Thomas Leon, Cynthia, Kathleen Fisher, L. Jones, Jeffrey Peak, M.D., John Gust, Leslie Speed, Tammy Cryer, and Christian Tentoni. So all of those brand new subscribers to our Patreon page.
Thank you.
They aren't missing out. They're on board. They're engaged in everything that's happening with this show. Every Tuesday and Thursday, we do the first two acts, the first two thirds of the show for free. And then we do the third act as the Shadow Docket exclusively on our Patreon page. It's a completely unfiltered, commercial-free continuation of all the fun and news, and it's only going to cost you $5 per month. Just go to bobseskashow.com right now. Look for the link that says The Shadow Docket Shows and sign up for $5 a month. Plus, you're going to be supporting this fully independent podcast. Don't miss out. Be like all those people whose names I just mentioned. They're on board. Again, it's bobseskashow.com. Bookmark it. Send it to all your friends. And we thank you in advance.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Bob Seska.
Silhouettes of sails, carving captions on the wall. Counterfeit coverage makes the message look so tall.
Oh yeah, brand new Seth Adam. This is from his new album. It's called, the album is called Fits and Starts and Stops. This is a track called Where's Your Heart? Yeah, I love this album. We're doing a Seth Adam week this week. And with the exception of the next break, I've got another song I want to play for you from Keith Daniel later in the show. But the whole rest of the week, we're playing Seth Adam music from the brand new album. Again, it's called Fits and Starts and Stops. SethAdam.com. Go and buy this album. Get this into your record collection right now. I've been following Seth Adam. He's a great guy. Politics spot on. And wonderful musician. He plays almost everything on this album. And I've been following his Instagram, too, and as he's constructed, throughout the pandemic, constructed his own home studio, and is there a bicycle ringing at me? Is that what we're hearing? Is that what's going on?
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's Verizon calling me again. I have a bike bell as my ringtone.
Yes, I was having some PTSD. I thought there was someone going to crash into me there for a second.
On your left.
Get out of the way. Yeah.
Oh, my God, man.
Yes.
Anyway, be like Bob and support indie music.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I was watching Seth Adam build his studio, record this album. I was wondering, when is this album coming out? I kept pestering, when's the new album coming out? And it was just the name of the album is indicative of the process that Seth went through to get this album out. Fits and starts and stops. And you'll be supporting a great guy. Once again, we're playing all Seth Adam music this week. And so make sure to follow him, SethAdam.com, also on Twitter, etc. All right, where do we leave off? So there was another bomb threat at Boston's Children's Hospital on Friday. This is after we finished the after party. We didn't report it on Friday, of course. Boston Globe reports that police are investigating another threat to Boston's Children's Hospital. You might be saying, this sounds like there have been many, Bob. And I say, yeah, this has been the second in so many weeks.
Right wingers.
Yeah, exactly. Matt Walsh, who is a podcaster on Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire network. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to play this clip one more time because this will give you a full scope in terms of what we should expect is going to happen at Boston's Children's Hospital because of this guy. This is Matt Walsh in mid-August. This is around August 13 when he first declared that his listeners should fight Boston's Children's Hospital.
Today on the Matt Walsh Show, children's hospitals around the country are butchering, mutilating, and sterilizing their young patients.
So none of that is true. None of that is true. That is not true. That's a gigantic lie. That is disinformation. Lie. That is a lie. That is a dangerous
lie. A lie with the intention of hurting people.
Yes, a lie. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about stochastic terrorism here. He's inciting his fanboys to physically attack Boston's Children's Hospital. And for now, they're calling in bomb threats, but how long until those threats turn into reality? Well, here's more Matt Walsh.
According to Boston Children's Hospital, literally every toddler who has ever been born or will ever be born is trans.
That is not true either.
Also
Boston Children's Hospital, they're not saying that either. This is all made up. This is stochastic terrorism in the context of something that Matt Walsh is inventing as a bit for his show to gain reach, to gain audience, to gain downloads, and most importantly, to gain advertising revenue. There are people, businesses, advertising on his show. There are podcast platforms, all the usual ones that carry the Matt Walsh show. And there is something to be held accountable about that too. So if you want to get active about this, make sure to mention that Apple Podcasts is still carrying the Matt Walsh show, where, by the way, the Matt Walsh show is in, I'm fairly certain, in the top 10, ranked in the top 10 in news and politics on Apple Podcasts, and then subsequently all of the other platforms, Spotify, on down the line, Stitcher, all the usuals.
I don't know what it takes to get Apple and other platforms to stop carrying Truth Social and all of these. I mean,
you mean Truth Central?
Truth Central.
I'm sorry. Yes, I mispronounced Truth Central.
Truth Central.
I'm fairly certain that Apple, whatever it is, the Apple App Store has gotten rid of Truth Central from there.
Yeah. Last I heard, they still had it.
Yeah, or either that or they're considering it. I only tangentially saw the news about that. There's an issue with Truth Central's moderation policy in terms of what kind of language it allows on the platform. I think these app sales platforms, the app stores and so on, are skeptical about Truth Central's ability to weed out the racists and terrorists and all the rest of the extremists and so on. So I think they're in the process of trying to get that app off the store.
Forgive me if I'm behind the curve on that, but the last I heard, they were still carrying it, and that disgusted me. And anybody who still is, or any of Matt Walsh's, or any of these guys, to spread this kind of violence-inducing lie has got to be stopped. It's got to be curbed.
God, if you're Apple Podcasts, why on earth would you want to be linked to a guy who is inciting terrorist attacks against Boston's Children's Hospital? I mean, it could be any place, but it's Boston's Children's Hospital. Why would you want to be linked to that?
They don't want to miss a dime, and there are red hats out there who'll sign up for it. It's money.
Have they not seen the news? Have they not followed what's going on with mass shootings and bomb threats and all the rest of it? Eventually, someone's going to get into their head to get one of their rifles, one of their AR-15s out of stockpile of armaments and march into Boston Children's Hospital one of these days.
It happened with the lie about the pizza parlor in Georgetown in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
That it was the portal to an underground child abuse network, child sexual abuse, no less.
Yeah.
And it led a man to show up with a rifle. This really happens. These are violence-inducing comments that are dangerous. It's worse than yelling fire in a fireless theater.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So what I said before still applies.
Yes.
If you're going to tweet about this, make sure to tag Apple Podcasts and ask them, why are you still carrying this? Why do you still want to be partially accountable when the inevitable happens, and that is an actual domestic terrorist attack against one of these children's hospital locations, whether it's Boston or someplace else. Doesn't matter. Everything is on the chopping block as far as Matt Walsh is concerned. And once again, it's one of the most grisly allegations that you could possibly levy against a hospital, that they are mutilating every child that is born there. And then when we consider the possibilities, the casualties that would occur in the event of an actual terrorist attack. I mean, that's the great irony of it. He's calling for his fanboys to fight Boston Children's Hospital. On one hand, he's trying to save the children, and on the other hand, he's endangering the children. I mean, that's what makes no sense about this, among many things. So it's inherently dangerous what's going on there.
Indeed.
And I hope it can be stopped before something terrible happens.
Yeah, perhaps the line should be drawn at inciting violence.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the next thing up here, maybe the biggest story of the day, is this Jeffrey Berman story, where Jeffrey Berman's got a new book out, and we could have a whole separate discussion about how some of these guys are holding their breaking news until their book comes out, when the American people, I think, would benefit from knowing as it happened.
Yes, and justice, the wheels of justice would benefit from knowing at the time that it happens.
Yes. So in this case, Mr. Berman describes how Bill Barr, after taking office in February of 2019, suggested that the conviction of Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer, for violating campaign finance laws, be reversed.
Right.
Mr. Barr also sought to stop related investigations into possible campaign finance violations, according to this book. Jeffrey Berman, if you remember, Jeffrey Berman was the guy who replaced Preet Bharara as the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, an SDNY. Right. And there was a whole big uproar about that because at the time it was rumored, at least, that Preet Bharara was in the process of investigating Donald Trump. And so he was removed. There was a temporary guy, an acting U.S. attorney, put in that place. And then the permanent U.S. attorney to be appointed there was Jeffrey Berman.
Right.
And so this story continues in his book. Mr. Berman writes that department officials pressured the SDNY to prosecute the former Secretary of State John Kerry. Mm-hmm. When Mr. Berman's office investigated and declined to bring charges, the department sent the matter to another U.S. attorney's office, which also declined to prosecute. In yet another episode, Mr. Berman writes that in September 2018, a department official called Mr. Berman's deputy 2 months before the November midterms.
Uh-huh.
After citing the recent prosecutions of two prominent Trump loyalists, the official said the office, which had been investigating Gregory B. Craig, we all know Greg Craig is a powerful Democratic lawyer, should charge him and do so by Election Day.
He was part of the Obama White House. And,
yes.
Republicans wanted to even the score for the prosecution of Michael Cohen and one other Trump associate.
Yeah.
They thought the important thing there was to even the score, when in fact Craig was innocent and even the prosecutors said so, but the case was taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not allowed to say that the man being investigated was innocent,
yeah,
because they needed the political capital there. It's a shocking story. It's an important mm-hmm. story about the corruption of the Justice Department by the Trump administration, and it must be pursued and investigated, and it is. This book has prompted a needed investigation, and it also, by the way, takes a little of the shine off of Bill Barr that's been yeah. glowing lately because of his frank comments about Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding out Barr is less of a hero than he would like us to believe. We
yeah.
kind of knew that anyway, but now we're seeing it in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
I have to address this, if not briefly.
Okay.
I tweeted controversially this morning, and I knew I was going out on a limb here. I didn't at Rachel because I didn't want that much attention.
Okay.
But I wrote it because I'm a coward. But here's what I wrote. I wrote, it has to be said, Rachel spent more than half her show last night promoting a book that reveals info we should have known 20 months ago, with no mention of the 40 subpoenas issued or the Trump request to keep the investigation frozen or Trump's mystery trip to D.C. Why? Now, I go on to say that we've had a couple of people come forward to defend Rachel and Berman and Maggie Haberman, who I mentioned subsequently in this thread. I was slow to get on this bandwagon, but we are tired. As progressive, we are tired of having news withheld from us by a journalist whose
yeah.
obligation is to report the news as she learns it, not later in a profit-making book. Although it is true, and Rachel pointed out that Berman was following department protocol, he was following the rules, he was following the law in the production of this book, it didn't have to wait 20 months. The law doesn't require him to wait 20 months. And we see how important what he had to say was because of the investigations it set off by the House Judiciary Committee. So it's obviously very important, and we're grateful for everything Maggie does bring us and everything Rachel brings us and everything Berman brings us. But why do we have to wait so long? Time is of the essence. Democracy is on the line. I'm not asking for instant gratification here, but I am asking that some of these folks stop focusing on a profitable book and focus instead on getting the information to the people who need it as quickly as possible.
Don't they know that it cuts into the veracity of what it is they're reporting in their book, knowing that they waited so long to hold
they know,
as a profit-making venture later on after they're done?
Maybe they do know, but maybe they don't care because the motive here is selling books.
Yeah, but if no one believes what they've written because they've done it in an advantageous way, in a way right. that is self-aggrandizing and profit-making for them, I mean, you know, my first reaction when I see things like that is I go, well, it's obvious that they want to sell as many books as possible, and so I start to wonder, are they shaving the edges off of the truth in order to... In order to do this. And I think that's a fair assumption to make, given the fact that they held this news for so long.
Imagine if The Boy Who Cried Wolf waited 20 months and then came out with a book about it. Well, people would have already been eaten.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, we're talking about basically, now this is like the third story so far between 2018, 2020, of Donald Trump deliberately interfering with the election by manipulating the federal government in order to give himself an advantage. We had him using our missiles that were supposed to be sent to Ukraine to blackmail Zelensky, I almost forgot his name, and to get an investigation launched into Hunter Biden and Burisma. And then we've got the obvious, the insurrection as well, the big lie and everything that led up to it. Now there's this, and then you add that on top of whatever the fuck happened in 2016, it's revealing insofar as he really didn't think he could win on his own. I think that's a fair assumption.
That he didn't expect to win. He didn't expect to win the first time.
Yeah, exactly right. So Mr. Berman's book said that during Mr. Trump's presidency, department officials, this is New York Times writing this, department officials made overtly political demands, choosing targets that would directly further Mr. Trump's desires for revenge and advantage.
That's him.
Mr. Berman wrote that the pressure was clearly inspired by the president's openly professed wants. That's a great way to set DOJ policy, isn't it? How to decide what to investigate and what not to investigate.
That's the corruption of the DOJ, and it's shocking how easily that was accomplished. And as many of us know, a lot of those people are still there.
Yes. The president's openly professed wants. That is so telling. Right. Throughout my tenure as U.S. attorney, Mr. Berman writes, Trump's Justice Department kept demanding that I use my office to aid them politically, and I kept declining in ways just tactful enough to keep me from being fired. I walked this tightrope for 2.5 years, and I'll add this right here, and said nothing about it until now, weirdly. Mr. Berman's now in private practice, and then he said, eventually the rope snapped.
Yeah. Well, in fairness to him, there were certain things he couldn't say under law and under department rules. But he could have said it as soon as he was fired or very shortly thereafter. I know he still has to clear some things with justice before he can say them. But the word could have gotten out by now. And we see how important it is for the word to have gotten out 20 months ago, because the investigation would be 20 months farther along at this point.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we saw throughout the Trump years. There was an entire conga line of Trump officials who had been unceremoniously fired. And then subsequent to that, Donald Trump turning them into punchlines on Twitter. For example, Sloppy Steve. We all remember Sloppy Steve.
Right.
Steve Bannon basically created Donald Trump, convinced him to run. And then as soon as Sloppy Steve was no longer useful to Donald Trump, he was fired, and then Donald Trump started calling him Sloppy Steve, and yet Sloppy Steve continues to support Donald Trump after the fact. It's just like Wajahat Ali said on the show last week, that it's just a bunch of people who are sucking Donald Trump's teats. It's almost like we compared it to that alien cow monster at the end of the Peacemaker series last winter on HBO. It was very obvious that Donald Trump is this gravy train for these guys, and they don't care if they're demonized by him or tormented by him. They're on board to collect as much cash as they possibly can. And tangentially to that, you get guys like Jeffrey Berman who wait years after the fact to finally reveal the truth.
We thank him for coming forward.
That is
ultimately
true.
I mean, that much we appreciate.
Yeah.
But like I said, I think I speak for a lot of us when I say it would have helped if we'd known this sooner.
Yes, indeed. Now, at the very least, the Senate Judiciary Committee is going to investigate these allegations. This is the latest news. We had the initial Jeffrey Berman news on Friday. This is the latest news coming down today that Dick Durbin and the Judiciary Committee are going to investigate allegations that the DOJ under Trump sought to use the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan to support Mr. Trump politically and pursue his critics, the committee's chairman said on Monday.
And this isn't just a Trump thing now. It's a Republican Party thing. I think it's important to remind people, to point out right here, that Republicans have already pledged out loud what they will do if they get control of the House. They plan to impeach Biden. Mm-hmm. They plan to impeach, they plan to go after Fauci. They plan to impeach Pete Buttigieg. They plan to impeach the education secretary. Jeez. They've got six impeachments planned already that they have spoken about publicly. That's why we have to win this election.
Yes.
As I said last week, we have a real chance here. Let's not blow it. Let's you know, run this through the goalposts. We've got to get this done, because what's at stake here is very Trumpian and very, very scary for democracy and for our government. And I can throw in a couple other things here, if I may, just some interjections that may or may not fit, but I think they're important and need to be said. On the subject of the 40 subpoenas that went out over the past week. And I said it before that Newt Gingrich is really at the heart of this. Newt Gingrich started the path that the Republican Party has been on right through the Trump presidency. Mm-hmm. And we now know that Newt Gingrich, from way back when in the 80s, was very much involved in this fake electors scheme. And Newt Gingrich is very much at the center of this investigation that involves these 40 subpoenas that went out over the past week. So keep an eye on that. I would be very gratified if we could get to the man who started this nasty, lying version of politics, the likes of which we've not seen before.
Oh, yeah.
And some sort of breaking news. We knew this was coming, but now it has happened. Senator Lindsey Graham has introduced a bill to ban most abortions nationwide after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That's less than half of a pregnancy. So it's not, we're not talking about late term at all here. And as somebody pointed out, this is really a ban on blue state abortions, because most red states already have laws more severe than this one. So this is really about going after the blue states. By the way, Lindsey also wants to cut Social Security. He wants to make the age for Social Security age 70, which cuts the Social Security budget by 21%. This is the Republicans going after your Social Security as well. Again, I can't underscore the importance of this election enough.
Can we talk about how horrendous that is as a political mistake by
Well, I hope so.
I mean, there's obviously the women's rights aspect of all of that as being a disaster if that were to ever eventually get passed, which I seriously doubt that it will, at least for the short term. But what a dumb thing to do in advance of a midterm election.
Because let's ban women's rights and take away Social Security. That's got to be a winning argument for us. In fact, Lindsey believes that this will unify Republicans at the polls this November by making this proposal.
No. You know what? Republicans are already unified. What this is going to do, this is going to further energize women voters. This is going to further energize pro-choice voters. This is going to further drive out new voter registration for people who want to stop this awfulness coming from the Republican Party, this fascist idiocracy that they're bringing about here. And it's a colossal political mistake, on top of being immensely detrimental, deadly to millions of women in this country. Does he not understand where the political winds are blowing right now? I don't think he does. I don't think he understands. I don't think he gets it. So
I think you're right, and I hope you're right. I truly believe that is the case. And but again, we can't rest on our laurels. We can't get too happy.
No,
it requires us. I can't emphasize this enough, and I've said it a couple of times. I'll say it again. And I don't mean this in a nasty way, but what we've learned is we can't depend on our elected officials. We can't depend on the courts. We can't depend on journalists. It's up to us. It's on us. You know, we complain about our politicians. We complain about our journalists. But at the end of the day, it's on us.
Yes.
It's on us to register and to vote and to get other people to do so and to win this country back from these radical theocrats.
Good luck, Lindsey Graham. Good luck. Good luck with this colossal fuck up.
Good luck with everything, Lindsey. You've got You've got a lot on the road ahead of you.
Okay. Lots more still to come. Back with more show right after this.
Seska plays more music.
You never set boundaries before. Normal days are done, and you're on the run. You got one foot out the door with a waistband gun and a setting sun. When I fall to the ground, single shot and I'm down, I don't see the light or my mother's smile. With a glance like a knife, you walk out of my life, I feel fire.
As is Keith Daniel. A song called Don't See the Light. Yeah. We wheeled this one out on Friday's After Party, giving another spin here on the free show, as we normally do. I got a link in the description to support Kevin Daniel and, of course, Seth Adam. Go to bobsesca.com, find the link for this episode, dated 9/13/22. And scroll on down, you'll find links to support all the indie music on the show. All right? Go and do it. BobSesca.com/music. Submit your work to the show. Thank you for doing that, too. Okay, you were talking in the previous segment about the upcoming midterms and Democratic right. chances, how we still need to hustle, how we still need to bring the energy, et cetera, how we should not get happy.
Do not get happy.
Do not get happy, as usual. However, I've got a bit of interesting poll news here.
Please
looks
share.
Like looks like Tim Ryan has very slightly jumped ahead of J.D. Vance in Ohio.
Ooh,
so
I
that's
would hope so.
Some great news. That's the latest USA Absolutely. Today poll. And, you know, there's always the opportunity that it could be an outlier, but this looks, based on the trends recently, this looks like it could absolutely be on the level. USA Today Network Ohio Suffolk University poll released Monday showed J.D. Vance and U.S. Congressman Tim Ryan virtually tied in the race to replace retiring GOP Senator Rob Portman. The Democratic congressman maintained a small lead with 46.6% of the vote compared to 45.6% of voters who still support J.D. Vance for reasons I will never understand.
But you see how close this race is
yeah.
and how important turnout is to make the difference in this.
Yes.
If I may interject here, Bob, because I want to hear more good news. But as soon as we heard, there have been a litany of stories over the last week saying, hey, the Democrats are pulling ahead. The Democrats
right.
have caught up. The Republicans are suffering. What's happening to the Republicans? They're failing. What's going on? And so there's been this week of those kinds of reports, and then suddenly, and I think it was the Washington Post yesterday, came out with a story saying, guess what? All the places that are showing Democratic gains are all the places where the polls were wrong in 2020.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, right.
You know, so, you know,
yeah.
And somebody, I think, appropriately tweeted, you know, isn't it funny how whenever the Democrats make gains, something comes out to say that they're not. And that never happens the other way around.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're being messed with here or if this is true, but again, it underscores the importance of our votes.
Well, remember, they also build these models for polling around
right.
the previous election. And what we have seen, certainly since the Dobbs decision, certainly since when the sort of preview of the Dobbs decision dropped, I forget if that was May, I think it was in May. Since then, women voters have been registering en masse throughout this period
yes.
of time. And that is going to change the demographics, change the dynamics of this midterm election.
Yeah,
plus, we've seen all of these successes that have occurred throughout August into September from the Biden administration and the congressional Democrats. So I think in that sense, we're talking about a whole new ball game here. And I think we're starting to see that reflected in the polls a little bit, but I don't think as accurately as we believe. I think this is going to be a bigger opportunity for the Democrats to pick up some seats here.
I certainly hope so. I certainly see that as an opportunity. But again, it shows how very, very close this is and how very important turnout is to get the results that we need to prevent those series of impeachments and all the other bad things that, you know, are coming, including cutting Social Security, if the Republicans gain power. It has to be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm concerned, you know, again, I wonder if the intention was to make us worry. Is that why they wrote that article? Or is there really something to that? You know, it feels like we're being messed with to a certain degree. It's interesting. Talk about cynicism. Republican candidates are showing us how scared they are about losing the female vote, mm-hmm. because now they're all parading out their wives to show us their softer side,
uh-huh.
and their lovely wives and their happy homes and their happy children after being mean about abortion and trans rights and so many other things. Now they want to show us how nice they are and how and try to win women back. Talk about cynical, to try to win women back by marching out the wives.
Yeah.
So keep a skeptical eye on all of that and feel free to point it out when you see it.
Well, get ready. Tomorrow we've got Rachel Bitticoffer on the show. We're going to be talking about congressional races, Senate side, House side. What she sees. She is, of course, the election whisperer. So we're going to talk to her about where she's landing on what will happen in the midterms.
I can't wait to hear. Because there's a source I trust.
Yeah, absolutely. And then next Wednesday, we've got someone who's brand new to the show, a woman by the name of Gabby Goldstein, and uh-huh. she is an expert on state and local elections.
Excellent.
So tomorrow we've got the national races, and then next week we're talking state and local with Gabby Goldstein on the Wednesday show. So get ready for that. Hang on tight.
The real lunatics, the real Q crowd,
yeah.
are the ones that are running for school board seats to censor books and to suppress gay rights and trans rights.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people... I mean, the most damage is really being done at the local level. Please pay attention to your local races, and please vote blue all the way through.
Yes, indeed.
Vote all the way down ballot.
So we were talking about revealing information long after it actually happened for the sake of selling books. Well, Maggie Haberman has done that once again.
Yes,
she reported the other day, and this is something that occurred 2.5 years ago at this point.
Yeah, over 2 years. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Donald Trump considered not leaving the White House on January 20th, 2021, and we're only now finding out about that.
And repeated that intention over and over again.
Yeah.
He repeatedly said, I'm not leaving.
Right.
I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving. And we're just now finding out. Now, we, in our hearts, we knew that that was his attitude. We knew that's what he was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But here's evidence that could have been brought forth so long ago. I swear, as a journalist, it is your obligation to bring forth the news as soon as you have confirmed it.
Yes.
And, you know, to wait 2.5 years to put it in a book, we're all just really tired of it. Maggie has done some good work. In all fairness, I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you know, this has got to stop. This, if it's my newspaper, you can't work here if you're going to withhold vital news from the public instead of reporting it contemporaneously.
Can you imagine if Woodward and Bernstein had held off on Watergate until 1976?
Like I said, the wolf eats everybody if you don't pay attention to the boy.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be 1976. It would have been like 1977, late in 1977. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like waiting on the Watergate story until Nixon is out of office, which ostensibly would have been, had it not been for Watergate, would have been January 20th, 1977.
Exactly.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I know you wanted to talk about the Berman revelations and not so much this, but it really is hard to ignore this. I mean, again, the Berman revelations are great. They're important. They're helpful. They've launched important investigations that we need to get to the bottom of, because this is a serious threat to our democracy to see the Justice Department corrupted in this way. But just don't sit on it for 20 months.
I know.
Or 2.5 years.
You know, the weirdest, here's where I land on this Maggie Haberman thing, apart from the irresponsible reporting, is that, man, I wish Trump had gone forward with that plan. I wish Donald Trump had decided, you know what? I'm staying. I'm not leaving the White House. You know why? Because I would have loved to have seen the U.S. Marshals drag that motherfucker out of the White House, kicking and screaming, and thrown him back into the back of some fucking official vehicle, hopefully not putting their hand on his head and allowing him to bang his head on the door
like
to the car.
Yeah, like you told the cops to do.
They put the hand, he said. Yeah, I want that to happen. If he's eventually arrested because of the Espionage Act violations and so on, I hope they don't put their hand on his head as he's loaded into the...
Don't be so nice. Yeah. Don't be so nice.
Right. That's exactly what he said. I remember that.
A lot of us had that fantasy, and a lot of other... And we continue to have these fantasies, like the people who believe Trump had gone to turn himself in when he flew back to Bedminster, or back to his Virginia, I'm sorry, back to Sterling, Virginia, his estate there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen him dragged out of the White House.
It's mine, you understand? Yeah. Mine! All mine! Get back in there! Down, down, down! Go, go, go!
Yeah, that would have been fun. I think that would have been a fun thing to observe.
The only difference is Daffy Duck laughs, Donald Trump doesn't.
No, that's absolutely true. And I've seen more and more people noticing that Donald Trump never laughs out loud. The only thing he does, and this is the only time I've ever seen him come close to actually laughing, when he's teasing or trolling someone during his rallies, he'll sometimes go, "Heh."
Yeah.
Like, that's as close as he gets to actually laughing.
Right. And the lack of laughter is sociopathic, if not psychotic.
Exactly right. All right. So this judge has dismissed Trump's frivolous lawsuit against Hillary Clinton. That's some good news
right there. Yep. That's everything he's filing, you know, and he's filing briefs that sound like a Trump rally instead of referring to legal terms.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as he does that, he's going to keep losing just like he did with this one.
And you know what that is, too? Money flushed down the toilet. Donald Trump just flushing cash.
Other people's money.
Yeah, yeah. Other people's money. Probably not his money, but he's, yeah.
No.
Once again, emphasizing the fact that Donald Trump's biggest victims are his own supporters, whether it comes to his lies and disinformation or if it comes to suckering them out of their life savings as they donate to Save America PAC, which, by the way, is now also under investigation by this grand jury in Washington, D.C., looking into January 6th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The election fraud. Yeah, fundraising fraud, the money
exactly
fraud.
Right. And guess who's been subpoenaed as a result of that investigation? Stephen Miller has been.
Has been
subpoenaed. Yeah. Too bad. He can only testify at night because if he goes out during the day, it melts. Right. The sunlight melts his skin. So he
of
can't.
Course.
Yeah. He's like an orc. From
you know, the Lincoln Project had a great ad that came out. It was a 1 minute spot that they've been running on Fox News.
Yeah.
And it basically talks about this fundraising scam for the legal fund that never was.
Uh-huh.
The Trump had raised money for his legal fund that wasn't based on the lie about the false election, which, as you said, is being investigated. But it talks about Donald Trump, you know, conned you. He lied about this. He lied. And then the spot ends with, because you know who the sucker is? It's you.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is directed at the Fox viewer and telling them that they've been conned. They've been hornswoggled. They've been suckered by Donald Trump. And that's a wonderful message to keep driving home. And good for them for that 1 minute TV spot.
Yes, indeed. That's also wonderful news. By the way, mark your calendars.
Yes.
The January 6th committee returns on Wednesday, September 28th.
All right.
So
there will be at least one, maybe two hearings this month. Whether they go beyond that is sort of doubtful. They're ready to wrap up, but they know they have a lot to pack in the little time that remains. They're talking about asking for testimony from Trump, from Pence, from a number of other people who probably won't give it. Mm-hmm. But, they are obligated to try as part of the record that they're creating.
Another thing to add to the list for Donald Trump's sleep struggle, as Lawrence O'Donnell calls it. Just one of my favorite things in recent memory from the Lawrence O'Donnell show, referring to Donald Trump as having a sleep struggle.
Probably.
Just trying desperately to fall asleep, knowing that the justice is closing in rapidly on his gigantic pumpkin head. Will it be tomorrow? Will it be the next day? We don't know, Donald. Could be any time now. When you least expect it.
Overall, I think he still thinks he's invincible, but there've got to be those moments of doubt at this point. There've got to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I think he believes he's invincible, but he's not.
Right.
He is not at all.
Right. He may be starting to wonder about that.
Yeah, this is a fast-moving situation for Donald Trump, mm-hmm. in which there are more crimes being committed. And this is just on one investigation alone, the Espionage Act investigation. And as you said, I guess it was last week or the week before, we should keep emphasizing the Espionage Act aspect of this.
Yes,
when you talk about the Mar-a-Lago search and seizure, Espionage Act. Always.
It's the Trump espionage scandal.
That's exactly right.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Yes. And if he knew any better, he would be hunkering down. He would be putting together that go bag to get ready, that Mike Ehrmantraut style go bag to fit in the back trunk and in an unmarked car parked at the airport. So in case he needs to leave suddenly, he's got the go bag ready. You know, a bunch of cash, passport, fake passports, assumed identity, all the rest of it. Hop on an airplane to a non-extradition nation. If I were Donald Trump, I'd be absolutely planning that because the walls are closing in. and we're all here for it. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah, we are. And listen, I don't know what you're going to talk about. I know you're about to tell us, but in the today's Shadow Docket, I want to talk about Trump's argument that some of this stuff may not be classified. Let's talk about the importance of that in the Shadow Docket for those who are Patreon members.
That and a whole lot more coming up next. See you over there, folks. Bye-bye.
He drives around all over the town. Toots is the driving cat. More fun, more music, the Bob Seska Show.
Silhouettes of sails, carving captions on the wall. Counterfeit courage makes the message look so tall. Triolic words full of disdain.